Next case on our calendar is 0926, State Ex Rel Gerald O.E. Nicolai and Robin L.B. Nicolai versus Erie Metro Parks et al. Justice O'Donnell has obviously recused himself from this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice O'Donnell, Judge Lisa Sadler, who's a judge of the 10th District Court of Appeals. Welcome, Judge Sadler. Mr. Ingram.
Thank you, Chief Justice Moyer. May it please the court, counsel, Bruce L. Ingram and Joseph R. Miller appearing on behalf of the relators in this case. Because the briefs are extensive and my time is short, I would like to limit my initial remarks and save the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Our clients, the relators in this case, are the owners of the former Milan Canal Corridor located on their property. These relators were parties to the key trust litigation in the Erie County Common Pleas Court and Court of Appeals that established their ownership rights in that former Milan Canal Corridor. Erie Metro Parks has taken that property to construct a leisure path. Metro Parks has continuously controlled and occupied that property for many years. Relators are entitled to a writ of mandamus ordering Metro Parks to commence appropriation actions to compensate the relators for this taking. Now, these relators are in the same position as the Coles relators in the Coles case that this court decided in 2007. In the Coles case, this court granted the writ that is requested here, a writ of mandamus, to the Coles relators. The Coles relators, identical to my clients, these relators, derived their title from the same source as the Coles relators, Key Trust.
But they were not parties in that case, were they?
Our clients were parties in that case, Your Honor.
Were their rights determined in that case?
Absolutely they were, Your Honor. These relators, with the exception, I believe, of one person who was added to a deed after the Key Trust case was decided, each one of these relators was a party and was added as a party by Erie Metro Parks to the Key Trust litigation, and their rights were in fact determined, just as the Coles relators' rights were determined in 2002 by the Erie County, in final judgment by the Erie County Court of Appeals.
Did that litigation also determine whether the property was taken subject to this alleged lease that allowed this public use?
Yes, in 2002, Key Trust litigation determined that the lease under which Erie Metro Parks claimed the right to construct this leisure path was limited to two parcels of property, that is the Townsend and Mary Track properties, and none of these relators, similar to the Coles, own Canal Corridor property within those two tracks, and that at this point is undisputed.
So your position is that issue of the lease application is moot and has been decided and is res judicata?
Is res judicata, just as this court in the Coles case in 2007 determined with respect to the Coles, the Key Trust case was res judicata as to all issues relating to ownership of that property.
Did relators, did they participate in the case?
Absolutely, they did. Represented in the case by counsel. Jeffrey Rengel, I believe.
Counsel, I believe your position would be the only way we could justify denying relief to your clients would be to somehow disavow what we did in the Cole case.
That's correct, Ron. Not only disavow what you did in the Coles case, but basically rule that res judicata in these circumstances simply cannot apply after having ruled in the Coles case that it did in fact apply. So a doctrine of res judicata, claim preclusion, and issue preclusion will have to be completely thrown out the window, frankly, in this case,
We would have to decide that the Coles case was wrongly decided.
That's correct, and there's no basis on this record to do so, or on any record, frankly, to find
Other than that, you don't see any distinction at all, is that correct?
No distinction whatsoever, Your Honor. No distinction in the Coles case between the Coles relators and our clients. All derived title from Key Trust. All were parties to the Key Trust litigation. What this case really involves is the Key Trust case was the first bite at the apple for Erie Metro Parks to prove that it owned title and our clients did not. It lost. Then the Coles relators came to this court in 2007. Erie Metro Parks attempted to relitigate the Key Trust case, and it lost. This case now is the third bite at the apple that Erie Metro Parks is trying to take to establish that our clients do not own the property that Key Trust.
Counsel, once we decide a case, we lose track of it unless it pops up in the newspapers. What has happened with the Coles property?
Well, what has happened with the Coles property is that the just recently, and I would have to say within the last 6 to 8 weeks, Erie Metro Parks finally filed appropriation actions in Erie County. That's almost 2 years after this court in 2007 ordered Erie Metro Parks to appropriate the property.
So it took them 2 years to comply with our order?
Virtually 2 years, that's correct, Your Honor. And it was filed, the appropriation actions were only filed after the Coles relators filed a federal district court action alleging violation of their civil rights. And it was only after that case was filed, and in fact, I believe at least over a year after that case was filed, that the appropriation actions were filed. So I think that is indicative of what these landowners are faced with respect to Erie Metro Parks. Erie Metro Parks is simply not willing to accept legal precedent, binding legal precedent, in cases in which they participated and have dragged their feet and have attempted to relitigate at every opportunity what has already been established.
Does the res judicata, or determination of the res judicata issue, decide the issues of statute of limitations and standing?
Yes, it does. All of the affirmative defenses that have been asserted in this case could have been raised in previous litigation. For example, the issue of title obviously has been raised. Res judicata was raised previously. And in addition to that, adverse possession was raised previously, and I believe that was also asserted as an affirmative defense.
Is this a continuing or a permanent taking, in your view?
This is a continuing take. That obviously implicates the statute of limitations. Revised Code 230509 has been asserted as a basis to bar this action on the statute of limitations. We believe that this case, that Revised Code 230509 must be read to toll during the time of the continuous occupation and control of property by a government agency which has abused its sovereign power and trampled on the landowner's rights under the Constitution to just compensation by physically occupying property that it does not own.
The briefs attempt to distinguish between the permanent and the continuing taking. How would you describe the difference? How should we apply that difference here?
The permanent take refers to the actions of, we'll call it the condemnor, in this case Erie Metro Parks. If the actions of the condemnor on the property in question are such that they are continuous and continuously control and occupy the property, that is a situation where the statute should toll. If, for example, there was a temporary take, where there was a take, and then 6 months or a year later, the public agency vacates the property, that would be a temporary take that could, in fact, be subject to the statute of limitations 230509.
What about the permanent take? It seems to me there are not many cases in which a permanent take would not also include a continuing take. Isn't that right?
I think that is probably the case.
Metro Park certainly, I would guess, anticipates that this pathway is going to be there permanently. They didn't put it in for just, for a definite period of time. So why is that not a permanent take?
Metro Parks could always leave it. They could have chosen at any point in time to vacate and abandon the property. If they did vacate and abandon the property, then at that point it would have been a temporary take. But having not abandoned the property, having continued to occupy the property, that activity constitutes a continuing take, much like nuisance and trespass under the same statute are considered to be continuing activities tolling this very same statute, 2305.09.
Do you draw the distinction between paving the bike trail as sort of a permanent take and then continuing to let bikers use it over and over? Is that the continuing take? Is that what a difference would be?
Yeah, mowing the grass, allowing people to, as it turns out, to trespass on the property, patrolling the property, that is the continuing activity. Simply paved it over, maybe that would be a different situation. I agree with the court on that. But in this case, it's been patrolling, mowing, keeping people out, allowing people on. That kind of activity is, in fact, continuing.
If we were to decide that this is a permanent take, what would be the critical date in your mind when the statute begins to run?
If this is a continuing take, I believe the court, on the basis of the Ohio Constitution, could determine that the only statute of limitations really is the 21-year prescriptive.
I didn't make it clear. I guess if it's a permanent take, mm-hmm. if we were to decide hypothetically this is a permanent take, what would be the date upon which that take would have occurred?
Well, under the facts of this case, I couldn't answer that. I don't know when it would actually accrue.
Well, 2003, I think, is when the pathway was opened, isn't that right, to the public?
Well, it may have been opened earlier than that, but it's been
constructed
a number
earlier,
of years.
But I,
correct.
Okay. I thought 2003 was the date. It was maybe wrong. That's what I read.
That might be the case, Your Honor. Okay. Did the statute accrue then if it's a permanent take? Conceivably, if it is a permanent take as opposed to a continuing take, but when the canal was opened for use, it has been continuously used for the past 7 or 8 years by Erie Metro Parks and its invitees to the property. The point I believe that should be made with respect to the statute of limitations is if 2305.09 is to be construed to limit to impose a 4-year statute of limitations for continuing conduct in the nature of a take, that violates the Ohio Constitution. The Ohio Constitution requires that where property is taken for public use, compensation, therefore, shall first be made in money or first secured by a deposit. Now, that the Constitution has been consistently interpreted to state that title remains in the landowner until compensation is made. So there's no take here, technically, under the Ohio Constitution, until compensation is paid. So we believe that if the court were to impose through 2305.09, a 4-year statute of limitations on a continuing take, that in fact violates the Ohio Constitution. And I think in our briefs we have cited cases from other states with similar constitutional provisions, including Arizona, in which that position has been upheld. I'd like to thank the court. We request that the court issue a writ of mandamus in this case to compel the respondents to initiate condemnation proceedings within 60 days of the court order, should the court see fit to grant the requested mandamus. Thank you. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Ingram. Mr. Young.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, good morning. My name's Tom Young. I'm with the Porter Wright Law Firm in Columbus. At council table is Megan Bailey, who is an associate at my firm and is my very able co-counsel in this case. Before I start into my argument, Chief Justice Moyer, I thought that you had asked Mr. Ingram, I may have misunderstood this, I'll make sure that there's no confusion with the court. I thought you were asking Mr. Ingram whether or not the Nicolai Relators were parties to the Coles.
That was my question, but maybe I didn't state it clearly.
They were not parties to the Coles case.
I didn't think they were.
They were not. I think Mr. Ingram thought you meant the Key Trust case. They were parties to Key Trust.
Yeah.
They
Coles.
Were not parties to Coles.
Mm-hmm. And Coles was a declaratory judgment action. Isn't that correct?
Well, no? I mean, by Coles, I mean the mandamus action that was in front of the court a couple years ago.
Okay.
Key Trust is how Mr. Ingram and I think the court has referred to the declaratory judgment action brought by Key Trust.
Yeah, okay.
So the Nicolai Relators were not parties in Coles' Supreme Court case, which is very important. They were parties in Key Trust, which is very important. And then, Justice Pfeiffer, you do not have to determine that you made some type of mistake in Coles to rule in favor of my party.
Okay. I'm interested in understanding why not.
Well, the reason why, Your Honor, is the way — I was not the lawyer in Coles. I don't want to
say I understand, but it's — we need to understand how this is different.
And I'll tell you exactly how it's different, Your Honor. In the Coles case, which involved different real estate, yes, it came from the same general strip, the same area, but it was totally different real estate, different tracts of real estate. The argument that Erie Metro Parks made to you in that case was they interpreted the Key Trust, the declaratory judgment action, Justice Moyer, as saying that the lease covered a 3-mile stretch of land, and virtually all of the Coles property was within that 3-mile stretch of land. So therefore, they didn't really argue to you whether or not the Coles had valid title to the property through the canal company, which they clearly do not. They did not. This court's not required, obviously, to go through a record and to determine every possible argument a litigant can make in front of you. You're pretty well bound. You could go outside it if you want, but you're pretty well bound by what the lawyers argue to you. What they argue to you in Coles was that we don't care about the underlying ownership of this property because we have a right through the lease, and the declaratory judgment action said that. What this court said in Coles was that what the declaratory judgment action said was, no, it doesn't cover 3 miles. It only covers this Mary and Townsend tracts, two smaller pieces of the property. Therefore, you haven't shown a right to the property. The issue, the big reason this case is different, Justice Pfeiffer, is the underlying issue of whether or not Bruce Ingram's clients own this real estate that my public client is being asked to pay for was not brought up in front of you in Coles, and there's no reason why we can't bring it up in this action. And let me turn my attention to explaining to the court why it is perfectly clear they do not own this real estate. They claim through the canal company. Mr. Ingram got up here and said to you that, well, Key Trust established the relator's title. It did just the opposite. And again, Mr. Ingram and I can talk all day long about what a court decision does. All you need to do is read the decisions. The issue in the Key Trust case was, is that lease valid? Had it been abandoned, which it was not, which is good for us. And then the other issue in Key Trust was, what real estate was included within the lease? It was a very general description. All the real estate that the canal company owns in this mile or this 6-mile stretch. And what Key Trust held, Your Honors, was that as of 1881, when that lease was entered into, the only real estate the canal company owned was the Mary and Townsend tracts. They held exactly opposite of what Mr. Ingram said to you. Mr. Ingram's clients came in front of the court in Key Trust. Their argument was that the canal company owns all the whole 6 miles, but that the lease was invalid, therefore we didn't have a right to be there. The Key Trust case said no, they only own Mary and Townsend. So as of 1881, It has been established through Key Trust, and there is issue preclusion, same parties, that the only real estate the canal company owned as of 1881 was Mary and Townsend. So the only way that they all of a sudden own 6 miles worth of real estate, which is what they're telling you today, is that somehow after 1881, after the lease was entered into, and 1904, when the canal company dissolved, they somehow magically acquired 6 miles of real estate. The evidence is undisputed that the canal company was defunct by 1881. It wasn't operating. When they dissolved in 1904, they sold their property to a party which eventually ended up to be Key Trust. The same legal description was used in that deed from the dissolution as is used in our lease. It's any real estate we own, we're selling to you. Well, the issue is, what real estate did you own? The deck action said, as of 1881, Mary and Townsend only. We presented evidence to this court, undisputed, from the title examiner, that the canal company never acquired any property after 1881 up to 1904. Therefore, it's undisputed the canal company never owned the property that's at issue in this case.
Who do you maintain owned it back in 1881?
Well, it was probably owned, Justice Stratton, that we haven't gotten to the absolute bottom of that, we haven't had to, but I suspect that the fee simple interest in that property is whoever owned the real estate when the railroad took it over. Because basically it looks like what the railroad had was probably a right to use it for railroad purposes, which Key Trust says includes a right to use as a public trail. So if you're looking at who owned the fee, it's probably the people that owned that real estate when the railroad took over, which is not, by the way, necessarily these relators. You can look at their deeds by which they acquired their surrounding property. Most of their deeds accepts the railroad property, accepts it. So,
and how did your client gain possession of the railroad property?
How did we gain it?
Yes, if you say that it's, you don't really know, and it's this and maybe that.
Again, undisputed, the railroad was there for 110 years operating a railroad. And they were there under a number of different reasons. They had this lease. They had right-of-way contracts. They had, you know, at bottom, they had adverse possession. They've been there for 100 years. Then the railroad, Justice Stratton, deeded the property to us in 1995. And they reserved a right, by the way, to continue to operate a railroad there if they want to in the future.
But so they theoretically deeded something without a specific description, I take it.
They deeded an
interest in real estate acquired perhaps through adverse possession without description to
the description,
to your client.
You're talking about the railroad deed.
Yes.
Yes. The railroad deed described the property in terms of mile markers on the railroad like we do today with our freeways. So there was a description.
But there was really no meets and bounds description as we know.
There clearly was not a meets and bounds.
And they said, we're giving you whatever we have. And whatever they had might have been the right to the property in dispute by virtue of adverse possession.
Absolutely.
Which was... Until someone goes into a court and establishes the right of adverse possession, does it exist?
That's a good theoretical question, Your Honor. I certainly somebody who claims adverse possession is in possession of real estate, or they wouldn't be claiming it. I guess until you get the court decision that you actually adversely possess it, you know, does that exist or not? That's I think kind of a philosophical question.
So your bottom line is that nobody truly owns this property, and therefore that you cannot be required to pay somebody money because they're not the true owner, just as you might not be the true owner, but you have a right to be there.
That's very close to our position, not totally correct. I don't want to say that.
No, would you correct me then, and what is your position?
Our position is, I mean, Your Honor, if you want to spend a lot of time or somebody wants to spend a lot of time, I think you could get down to the bottom of who owns the fee interest in that property. Our position is very simple. We're not a squatter on this property. We didn't come in and take over property that Bruce Ingram's clients were using. We've been on the property for 120 years through a variety of legal means. It's up to somebody else who wants to dispossess us. They must show a better title than what we have. Mr. Ingram's clients came in front of you saying, we're the owners of the Milan Canal Company. The Milan Canal Company only owned two tiny pieces of real estate which aren't involved in this case. They can't possibly have acquired title. Mr. Ingram needs to explain to you when he gets up why the lease description that we're now the lessee under the lease is exactly the same as the deed description by which, in the dissolution action, by which the court sold whatever real estate the canal company owns. How does that same description in Key Trust only mean Marion Townsend, but all of a sudden, today, no, it means 6 miles? It can't, unless they can show somehow that they acquired real estate in that 20-year gap between 1881 and when they dissolved, and they can't do that because it didn't happen. They have deeds to nothing.
So, Mr.
Deeds to nothing.
Mr. Young, it's just so I understand, are you saying that the Coles, State XRL Coles versus Granville was inaccurately decided?
No, I am not, Your Honor, because this issue of whether or not the issue of the Coles' legitimacy to their title simply was not brought in front of the court in the Erie Metro Park, by Erie Metro Parks in the Coles case. They didn't argue it.
And yet we ordered that the mandamus could issue, correct?
You did, because I think the way the court viewed this was Erie Metro Parks is saying, well, we have a right to be there because of the lease. We think Key Trust said we had a right to be there. When you said no, there's no right under the lease to be there, that then you therefore granted the writ of mandamus.
But I guess that's why we have the relators here saying we're in a similar position and we ought to have the same result. That's where the confusion is coming in.
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm getting short on my time. I'll reference you to my briefs, but we're talking about issues of issue preclusion, claim preclusion from the Coles case. From the Key Trust, again, I hate to keep harping on this. All Key Trust said is that the canal company owned Mary and Townsend. It does not help these relators. When you look, though, at Coles, you got to apply the various rules on issue preclusion, claim preclusion. Issue preclusion, this was not an issue raised in Coles, so therefore it's not issue preclusion. Claim preclusion, it's a classic example.
Well, who were the parties in Coles?
The Coles were some other property owners.
And who was on the other side?
Erie Metro Parks.
Your client?
Yeah, we were definitely there.
Okay, and when you say issues weren't raised, don't you have a duty to raise the issues that you have?
Legally, Justice Pfeiffer, when you're looking at issue preclusion, claim preclusion, on issue preclusion, the law is very clear that a matter which could have been raised but was not raised in a prior case is not subject to issue preclusion. That's absolutely clear. Claim preclusion, it could be in claim preclusion. But claim preclusion, first of all, this is an offensive use of claim preclusion. If you look at the Onesti case, 113 Ohio State 3rd, this is a classic example of offensive use by the relators of issue of claim preclusion. And Onesti said, that's not recognized in Ohio. It's disfavored in Ohio. About the only time we're going to allow it is if you have a case with the same plaintiffs, the same defendants, and you're asking for exactly the same relief. Now, Mr. Ingram will say that's our case here. It's not our case here. We have different plaintiffs. We have different real estate involved. They're asking for different relief. They're not asking you to order us to appropriate the Coles property. They're not. This is different real estate. So there are technical rules, Justice Pfeiffer, on these preclusion issues that I think need to be looked at. And if they're looked at, I think you'll conclude you weren't wrong in Coles. And I'm not here saying that what you ruled in Coles was wrong. It was just an issue that wasn't brought in front of you. And I don't think there's any legal doctrine that prevents us from bringing it in front of you today. Finally, running out of breath, the statute of limitations bars this case. If the court wants me to respond to any questions.
But, yeah, I did want to get to that, because that's a couple of legal issues here we haven't touched on. But the question of the is this a permanent or a continuing taking, and that determines, obviously, the statute of limitations and the standing issue, does it not?
I do not think it does, Justice Moyer, even though this appears to me to be a permanent take. I mean, we're in there. It's not a temporary period of time. This statute of limitations was just passed 5 years ago. I suspect it was passed in response to Justice Stratton, your decision. I think it was the RTG case, which was a regulatory taking case. But the legislature now in black and white has told people, if you want to bring a claim for physical taking of real estate, you got to bring it within 4 years. That's precisely.
Well, isn't that case. That's precisely why we need to decide in this case whether this is a permanent taking or a continuing taking. If it's a permanent taking, then we have to determine at what date did the taking occur.
And
if it's continuing, then the statute of limitations is open. Isn't that right?
No, it's not, Your Honor. If you follow this continuing trespass theory that Mr. Ingram is arguing to you, you've told the legislature, I'm not saying you can't do this, but basically you've told the legislature you've done a futile act. What does this statute mean if it says you got to bring an appropriation action within 4 years after the take? What's it mean if you?
Well, I think that I understood it to mean that each time travelers go up and down this path that are accessed through the Erie parks, and each time the grass or the vegetation is mowed, is a new activity of a taking, so that it. Continuing to build one taking upon the other, much like if a dam is constructed and it floods every, you know, heavy rain three times a year. Every time that rain comes by, you know, or that flooding, it could be viewed as such.
Well, I think that's getting in, though. That's getting into, like, trespass law with continuing trespass. Again, if you adopt that theory, then it seems to me you said the statute means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. They shouldn't have wasted their time. They shouldn't have passed the statute if you can come in and argue, well, every day you're there, you continue to take the property. So I don't think that would be a proper reading under the theory that you don't want to read legislation.
Are you saying it doesn't matter whether it's a permanent or a continuing, once it's obvious you have 4 years?
Absolutely, Judge. I think the statute, I mean, it's what the statute says. If there's been a physical taking of the property, you have 4 years. And by the way, Justice Moyer, Chief Justice Moyer, the date of the take, even though I won't try to tell you a precise date, but it's absolutely clear here. The take took place no later than the end of 1999. The Nicolai relators alleged in their complaint that we've been in possession since 1999. I presented evidence to the court, which wasn't disputed, that the possession probably took place before that. But for purposes of a statute of limitations analysis, I basically have used the end of 1999, because that's when they even admit we were in possession. They are way, way out of line on the statute of limitations. And again, Justice Pfeiffer, this is an example where issue preclusion, the fact that the statute wasn't brought up in the Coles case legally, does not mean we can't bring it up in this case. It does not. So as Mr. Ingram indicated to you, the briefs are lengthy. Your Honors, I would just leave you with the idea that it would be extremely unfair to make my client, a public agency, spend tax money to pay people for real estate that they do not own. And these people do not own this property.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Mr. Ingram, you saved just a little less than a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. The date of take in this case is the date of trial. There are numerous cases that have been decided by this court which indicate that in the case of a physical involuntary taking, the date of take is the date of trial, not 1999. I also want to point out that at any point in time, Erie Metro Parks could abandon this take. While it is not in the record, the director of the Erie Metro Parks testified they considered abandoning the pathway at one point. So to impose a four-year statute of limitations in this case really puts the landowner in a position of guessing whether he should be bringing a takings case, a mandamus case, on pain of being found that the state could possibly abandon it, or that the taking had not continued for a sufficiently lengthy period of time in order to be considered a take. So it really yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Young made mention of the fact that the Key Trust case can be viewed as only limited to the Marion Townsend tracks, and your property, or the property owned by your clients, was not part of that consideration, and they have failed to show, I guess, the chain of ownership to this property that will allow them to exert ownership, which is obviously the first thing to be established in the taking.
Well, let me address that first by pointing out what the court did find. This court did find in the Coles case, and with respect to the property south of Mason Road and north of Mason Road, which was the basis on which the court discussed the ownership issues, in both instances, the court stated that the issue was whether the res judicata effect of the Key Trust litigation warranted mandamus. And I'm looking at the headings in the court's opinion. Mandamus to compel appropriation proceeding for property south of Mason Road, res judicata effect of Key Trust. Same heading.
Is that the same property?
Yes, it is exactly the same
property. Not just the Mary and Townsend tracks that are subject of the Coles and the Prairie Limited. Is it this 6 miles?
It's the entire canal that was at issue in Key Trust, all the way from Milan to the mouth of the Huron River. Erie Metro Parks claimed that they owned that by virtue of lease, and later claimed they also owned it by virtue of deed. And in the Coles case, this court addressed the deed issue and said the deed did not transfer any property to the railroad company because the deed holder didn't own it. So this court clearly in Coles determined that the deed did not give Metro Parks any interest in this property.
Counsel, if we should determine that the statute of limitations has not run, and also that there is not a res judicata, issue preclusion, claim preclusion effect, where does that leave this case?
If there is no issue preclusion or res judicata with respect to either Coles or the Key Trust case?
No, the Key Trust case, I didn't quite understand that was an issue. I thought both parties agreed that decision was effective and not in dispute.
Okay. If the Keys Trust case is res judicata on all these issues, we are entitled, just like the Coles were entitled, to a writ of mandamus. The Key Trust case decided all relevant issues pending in this case with respect to ownership of the property. Our clients own this property. There's no dispute that they've submitted deeds, not only from Key Trust for the canal corridor, but also deeds with respect to the property underlying the canal corridor.
Having established
ownership on the basis of Key Trust, we're entitled to
that. I understood opposing counsel then, there apparently is a dispute is about the meaning of the Key Trust litigation, because I think, well, I heard both say that's a valid decision that's not being challenged. I think I also heard both of you say it means something different. So apparently that would be an issue.
Well, there's no dispute on our part as to what the Key Trust litigation has.
I understand that.
And if I might point out, If this court seems to be troubled by the fact that the 1904 Dissolution Act, at that time, the canal company didn't own anything. Well, the fact is, the canal company, by virtue of the Canal Act in 1827, owned an easement in the canal itself. That was not transferred to the railroad in 1881. What was transferred to the railroad in 1881 was the right to operate that railroad over two parcels of property owned in fee by the canal company. The rest of the canal lands were owned by operation of law. And while we're talking about the intent of the parties 120 years ago, it is certainly conceivable in 1881 that the canal company was not going to grant the right to the railroad by lease to operate a railroad over canal lands that it owned solely for the purpose of operating a canal, but did grant to the railroad by lease the right to operate a railroad over land that it owned in fee and was not limited to canal purposes. So if what Mr. Young is saying is it doesn't make any sense that there should be an 1881 lease and then there was property left over in 1904, I suggest to the court there is an explanation for that, and I believe an adequate explanation for that to support the decision of Key Trust, to support the decision of Coles that Key Trust is res judicata. The lease is limited to those two properties, Townsend and Mary Tract, and the landowners, by virtue of the 1904 dissolution and receiver's deed, obtained title to the canal corridor through Key Trust.
Mr. Ingham, let me just ask you, your reference to Coles and the Key Trust, rather, and the determination of the property interest there, paragraph 48 of our opinion in Coles, under these circumstances, the Key Trust litigation conclusively determined that the property subject to the board's interest, Metro Board, under the railroad lease lay within the boundaries of the Marion Townsend parcels. It did not determine, as the board contends, that those boundaries extended beyond those parcels. And then it goes on to say that a different finding would not be appropriate. Isn't that, do you not read that as limiting our decision in Coles, referring to the Key Trust decision, as limiting it to that is the ownership of property issue to the Townsend property?
No, I do not, Your Honor, because Coles itself determined that the Coles relators owned the property for which they were seeking a writ of mandamus. If this court had found instead that the Key Trust case was limited to a determination that all Erie Metro Parks had a right to was the canal corridor and those two properties, there would have been no basis for this court in Coles to issue the writ of mandamus. But the court, on the basis of Key Trust and the finding that Key Trust was res judicata on the issue of title to the entire canal corridor, or at least the canal corridor in which the Key Trust participants were parties, was vested entirely in those persons. The Coles could not have come out otherwise had the court not found Coles to have, Key Trust case to have been res judicata on ownership of the entire pertinent canal corridor.
Thank you, Mr. Ingram. The case is submitted.
You
will be advised of our opinion.